So, if you'd like to open to Genesis 25.
Part of 25 was already covered in a sermon last week, and that's the latter part of the book having to do with the Esau and the game and all that stuff. So, you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you do. I forget the sermons a few days after I see them, too, but... But specifically, I was going to be covering that, but since Philip covered it in a sermon, we're just going to do these other sections right here. So the first part is the death of Abraham. Oh, let's look at the map really quick. I found this map, which is great because, and let me throw out a question to you. When someone says, tell me what you know about Isaac, just what events in the Bible stand out when somebody says, you know, tell me one or two or three events or one event about Isaac, and what events usually come to mind?
Well, the one that I would think of is when, you know, when he was a young man and he was offered up by his father Abraham.
Yes.
That, but as far as Isaac himself, I think the having the two sons, you know, Esau and Jacob, what stands out is that, you know, how he loved one more than the other, or
yeah,
was favorable to one more than the other. That's what stands out in my mind.
And Rebecca also, right?
They ate in the house a lot.
They what? Oh, he ate in the house? Yes, he did. That's, it gives you a little indication of who he was. That's the idea.
In the house whenever Rebecca came and joined him.
Yeah.
And whenever he was issuing the birthright,
yeah,
he was in the house.
You're right. Good cook. Just like today, some men are really good cooks and some are not. Be me. But any other questions about Isaac? I was just trying to make a point about Isaac. Most of the time... Oh, yes, go ahead.
Well, he's interesting because he's kind of... His story is more of a bridge between Abraham and Jacob. He is the quiet patriarch.
Good way to put it. And... if we think of him, usually it's in relation to one or the other. It's to do with some event involving his dad or his sons, and not just him, except for today. This is the one chapter, and that's 26, that'll be about him. I'm not sure where that little guy is on here. Up, there he is. This is a cool map because it shows the different events. I didn't know that guy was named, but that's Abraham's servant. And really, it was only him that went up to Paddan Aram to find a wife for Isaac. And then it was only Rebekah that came on back down with him. And then you have number two. They met when Isaac was down here in Beer Laroi, and he went up and met Rebekah and the servant. And they were married, and... basically, we're today right here, we're going to cover this really quickly, and then these other things too. The death of Abraham, okay? So let's move on with that. Abraham lived quite a life, and this is interesting. The last 35 years of this incredible life, really there's not a lot about Abraham, except for this passage right here. And so if I could get help reading today, chapter 25, and if we read 1 through 10. Vince, do you want to? Alrighty.
I most certainly will. Pardon me if some of these names here. Okay, now Abraham took another wife whose name was Cherub. And she bore to him Zimran, and Johash, and Midian, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua. And Johashkin became the father of Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashuran, and Lethjesim, and Lurim. And the sons of Midian were Ephah, and Ephron, and Hanok, and Abada, and Eldash, All these were the sons of Keturah. Now Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. But to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts while he was still living, and sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the land of the east. All these are the years of Abraham's life that he lived, 175 years. And Abraham breathed his last and died in a ripe old age, an old man and satisfied with life, and he was gathered to his people. Then his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave at Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, facing Mamre. And the field of the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth, where there Abraham was buried with Sarah his wife. And it came about after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac lived in Beer-Hira-Roar.
Well done, except for trying to put the Hancocks into the Bible right there. Evidently, after Isaac was married off and Sarah was gone, we can only presume. It just says that he took another wife. I was reading one person that said he thought he may have married her while Sarah was still living, because we know there's a lot of that going on in the Old Testament. But probably not. He says he took another wife. So, and she bore to him six different sons. And we learn a little bit about them here. One of the Midian, we know that these different sons, consistent with the promise made to Abraham, you know, through Isaac, you know, the stars of the sea, you know, stars of the sky, the blessings. It was also true of these other folks. They'd go on to become, you know, leaders of tribes and eventually nations. And especially Midian, we know that where do you see the Midianites showing up again? You remember some of the places?
Well, Joseph.
Moses married a Midianite, yes.
They're the ones who took Joseph to Egypt.
Yep. And who's the guy that put the fleece out? You know, Gideon, wasn't that the Midianites? And they're described as, in Judges, as like locusts, meaning they were blessed with abundant population. They grew to be large nations of their own, specifically Midian. And then he's taking care of business here. He that's the best thing to do, right? If you're going to have a will, you take care of dividing things up before you leave. And, of course, who is the heir? Who's his heir? Isaac. And I'm not sure if this reference, when it says he gave him all, verse 5, includes the blessing, because that's a given. The blessing, it could be that just his entire estate he gave to Isaac. But then he gave what to these other folks? And that would include Ishmael, I believe. Gifts. And probably very generous, you know, gifts. Because what did he ask them to do after he gave them the gifts?
To move away.
Move away. Any thoughts on why he would ask them to do that, to move eastward? Didn't want them around Isaac. After he's gone, didn't want there to be conflicts, you know, arguing about the inheritance and stuff like that. We can presume that. We're all seeing what we have here, but that's probably the most likely thing. And so these folks went out to the east. And and then the description in verses 7 through 10, he gave up the ghost, essentially. And that's what some of the versions, I believe, say. Any thoughts on the way it's described as his, he lived 175 years, so that was 100 years in Canaan, right? Because he was 75 when he left Ur. New American Standard says, a ripe old age, an old man and satisfied with life. And I know the English Standard says, a good old age and full of life. I don't know exactly what all that means, except I would love to have that be a description of when I leave. I think it indicates that he did everything he was going to do. He's not somebody that I still wish I could have done that, you know. He did. He was And it's almost like he's being discharged from his duties of this world and the burdens of age. And it's almost like he's choosing to breathe his last. His work is done. Any other comments about that?
Contrast that with the words of Jacob before Pharaoh. The years of my life have been few, and basically, I can't remember exactly how he put it. But
yeah. Yeah, I thought about that reading with this. Because he didn't know if Joseph was alive or not. It was a torment. So when he found he was alive, that's great, but that was a very short part time of his life from that point.
It's not that Abraham didn't have his challenges either. I mean, he had to send his son away, Ishmael, and it grieved him and other things such as that.
Yeah.
Dealt with Lot and all that.
But it's interesting, this period of his life may be quiet. You know, he lived a normal life, going in and out. He was a man of wealth and means, so he took care of things and then gave everything out. Who buried him? Do you notice who buried him?
Ishmael.
And Ishmael. That's kind of interesting because there was conflict between them at various times. Maybe Abraham pulled them back together. Don't really know. But it's a good thing. It's how these kind of events should be, with family coming together and not distance between them. So we've done that in much more time than I wanted to, but any other comments about this? We could talk about more about Abraham and his life. But we have what we know here. We're going to also take a moment to look at the death of Ishmael. And it makes sense that this is in here because he was also a son of promise. You know, the various things that were told to his mom. Who was his mom? Hagar. And in two or three different places, in Genesis 16:10 and 17:20, 21:13, God promised things and that they'd be fruitful families. And so let's go. And Joe, do you want to read this section about Ishmael, 12 through 18 of Genesis 25?
Now these are the records of the generations of Ishmael and Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maid, bore to Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names in the order of their birth. Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, sorry about the pronunciation, Kedar and Abdiel and Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Maza, Hadad, Tima, Jetur, Napish, Kidama. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and by their camps. 12 princes, according to their tribes. These are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he breathed his last and died, and was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is east of Egypt, as one goes towards Assyria. He settled in defiance of all his relatives.
Okay. There's a quote, cross-reference about him, defiance of all his relatives. I got it mixed up with. It says he's gathered to his people, just like Abraham. But is the description of Ishmael as good as the description of Abraham? And the answer is no. You know that he lived a good life, basically. But this is again a digressing from the story of Isaac. But that because these promises have been made and he is a son of Abraham, it makes sense that we should know about the accomplishment of these promises. And that's what this is an account of, essentially. How many sons did Ishmael have? 12. And how are they described as what? Princes, which would indicate they too would go and be eminent as leaders of tribes that would eventually become nations. Something I read just like last night, it threw me off, that Midian was a descendant of Ishmael and not of so I am not positive about that. I'll study that up, and because Midian is mentioned as a son of Keturah and Abraham. Anyway, that's beside the point. But that's these folks went to the east also, and they peopled a very large continent between Egypt and Assyria called Arabia, which we know our geography of where that's at. What did they have in verse 16 besides just villages? It says villages and various settlements or encampments is one version, which would indicate they had, you know, true fortifications and could handle. They were very developed in terms as peoples, and probably geology shows that also. Some of the things about people in that part of the country, that part of the world, but these families basically were really fruit of the promise that was made to Hagar concerning Ishmael. So let's move on to really chapter 26 is where I wanted to spend the balance of our time. And this is just about Isaac. And it's the only chapter really that is devoted just to Isaac and to Isaac and Rebekah as they traveled. So let's read 1 through 11 initially. Anybody want to read here for me? Andrew.
There was famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of Philistines, Gerar. Then the Lord appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land which I should tell you. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abram your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So Isaac dwelt in Gerar, and a man in the place asked about his wife, and he said, "She is my sister." For he was afraid to say, "She is my wife," because he thought, "Lest the men in the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold." Now it came to pass, after they had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah's wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, "Quite obviously she is your wife, so how could you say she is my sister?" Isaac said to him, "Because I said, lest I die on account of her." And Abimelech said, "What is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us." So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death."
So we'll come back to "She's my sister" part two in just a minute here. What is the real adversity that Isaac is facing? I mean, here he's been promised this land, but it looks like he's not going to be able to get any bread from it, basically, because what has happened? Famine. And it seems like that's a recurring event, too, because it happened to his father also, and to his son, right? So what should he let that bother him? No, and he doesn't let it bother him. He still believes in the covenant, but it is a trial for Isaac that he's going to have to endure, basically. And it means he's going to have to move. So he takes off, it looks like, for Egypt, and he goes to Gerar. That's a Philistine out towards the coast, a little town, and we see it a lot in various places. That's also a place where Abraham went. He needed, you know, we know about Egypt also through our that the grain is usually much better there, so everybody heads to Egypt, it seems like. But who appears to him as he arrives in Gerar? God appears to him. It's interesting and of course he repeats the three-part promise. And that's interesting that's the time he needed the encouragement, is it not? He's pulled up everything, all of his flocks and herds, and he's heading toward Gerar. He's thinking he's going to have to go to Egypt. And in his case, rather than being told to go to Egypt, what does God tell him?
Don't go,
which is interesting. Could be because of who he is, his personality type, or whatever. We don't know, but he's told not to go. Stay, and what's the two-part main blessing that he can hold on to, that all of us can hold on to, is I am what? I'm with you, and I will bless you. I'll bless you. And then he repeats the three-part promise. And also, verse 5 is interesting, too. He mentions, probably for Isaac's benefit, or maybe because of the, it's an inference for him to do the same. What does he say that Abraham did?
Obeyed him.
Hearkened to my voice. And of course, it's mostly a reference to an event that Isaac's very familiar with. Would you agree? That's the epitome of him hearkening to God's voice and obeying him. So you're going to be blessed, Isaac. And because he's attributing the blessing to Abraham, because Abraham, and it's a repetition, he obeyed me, he kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, my laws. It's almost this obedience of maybe natural things and anything related to trials that he had. It's just it's there for Isaac to take hold of and to attribute this to Abraham and Abraham's faithfulness. It seems like a very way to say a very complete faith. And then any quick comments about any of this? I know I'm moving through it pretty good. Yes.
I'll just say one thing. You know, God tells him don't go down to Egypt, even though there's a famine. And it just reminds me that Hagar takes a wife for Ishmael from the land of Egypt. Of course, she was an Egyptian too. So maybe that's the reason why he told him don't go down there, because there could be a conflict between Ishmael and Isaac. I don't know, but that just kind of pops into my mind.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a possibility, yes. We're just given what we're given in many ways, and it is hard to know exactly the motivation, except it's what God wanted to be done. And it's obvious as to why he wanted it done. He said he would be with him. And of course, here's this temptation. What temptation did Isaac enter into? The same as his dad, right?
Yeah, his wife being beautiful, saying, you know, say that you're my sister so that the men won't kill me and take you from me.
Yeah.
But if God's with them, you know, just like with Abraham, but this time, you know, at least Sarah was half sister to Abraham.
Yeah.
This is, you know,
either story. Way, neither one of them, you know, it shows a weakness in them and to expose their wives that same way. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's here for us to. What can we learn from this? What points can you learn from the fact that men we look at as being as good and great as they are do something like that? Pardon?
They're just people.
They're just people. Yeah. Yep. They can sometimes people like them, as esteemed as they are in God's sight, can be guilty of very, very great things. You know, let he who stands take heed, lest he fall. I think another point, is it possible that it's easy to imitate the weaknesses of people we look up to as well as their strengths? Because that seems to be.
Rebecca wasn't weak.
Pardon?
Rebecca wasn't weak.
No.
At all.
Well, and we can only infer between the lines how the wives felt about some of these plans.
The younger one before Isaac.
Yeah.
She was
Well, she was carrying out God's plan, but
yes,
weakness.
Oh, I was referring really to this one event here, though, when he said, "Rebecca's my sister." Now, how is it found out that in this case that it's and it's different from Abraham's situation. Remember Abraham's situation, God went to Abimelech, which is, again, one of those generic names like Caesar. So it's a different Abimelech here. It's not the same person. I guess it's many years in between these two Abimelechs. But God visited Abimelech and says, hey. And of course, he had not approached Sarah at all. So, but in this case, who happens to see evidence that it's not his wife or that it's not his sister? The king. Anybody else could have seen it. Abimelech himself is looking out his window, the scripture says. And what about his reaction? Here it is, someone who we wouldn't think is a godly character. The comments he makes seems to be, he's at least a wise leader. And he could have even had knowledge, historically, of the event that happened with another Philistine leader named Abimelech and Abraham. And here this guy's from the same family. What are you trying to do to us? It's just an interesting story. He detected Isaac's deception. The king saw Isaac sporting his wife, basically. Proverbs 5:18 says, "Rejoice with the wife of your youth." It sounds like that was a good way to describe. He was doing things he wouldn't do with a sister. And he sees that in a way that he knew, you know, there was consequence of a moral offense. And he shows how groundless. He doesn't even address what Isaac says. "I thought she was my sister." And he talks, he just doesn't even, he ignores that and just addresses in verse 10, "What is this you've done to us?" And Abimelech also, what's the next step he takes in verse 11?
What's the word out? Don't go into.
Yeah, he actually creates a law to protect this family while they're there. All right, let's go on with, a couple of thoughts. Yeah, a lying tongue is but for a moment, right? Truth is the daughter of time. And this is a great example of that. You know, and in time, it'll come out. One sin leads to another. So this is the beginning sin you don't want to be involved in because it'll lead to more. So let's read verses 12 through 16. I would call this the prosperity time of Ishmael, of Isaac, excuse me. All these Bible names, Isaac. Joe Hickman used to get Moses and Noah mixed up, so I guess I can get Isaac and Ishmael mixed up. How about Rick? Are you busy back there? You want to read something?
I can read. 12 through 16 or 17?
I think we'll just read 12 through 25. I'm sorry, let's see. Yeah, we probably need to just time-wise and everything.
Okay. "Now Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so that the Philistines envied him. Now all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, 'Go away from us, for you are too powerful for us.' And Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gerar and settled there."
Hey, Rick, just stop. We'll just do that section and then come back. Thank you. There's a fascinating verse in this verse 12. There's a famine going on. And what does it say? Isaac sowed in that land and reaped what? 100-fold. That's almost miraculous, I guess, at a time like that. So that obviously showed God's blessing on him. Verse 13, became rich and continued to grow richer. And it's happening in front of the eyes of the Philistines until he became very wealthy. The amazing thing is the time it took for that to happen. It was right away, right in Gerar. We're going to learn about him moving out of Gerar into a more remote area. But he's there in front of the Philistines. And he had flocks and herds. And what else does it say he had in verse 14? Great household, servants. He'd grown in many ways in just a short period of time. And then it references the smallness of these Philistines. In the past, they had plugged up the wells. It's the wells is your, if we're not using them, nobody else is going to use them either. It's a malice way of thinking it. And then why do you think Abimelech said to Isaac, get away from us? Why would he specifically say that, possibly?
He was scared of him.
Scared of him?
Yeah, kind of like, Pharaoh got scared because there was too many Hebrews in Egypt. So back then it was might makes right, a lot of people.
And the reason he'd be scared of him, possibly, is?
He's using up all the resources in the area. He's probably using up all the resources in the area. Because he's got all these flocks and herds and...
Well, he was given a certain area, it would seem like.
Yeah.
But the fruitfulness that he got compared to anybody else's, maybe...
He was much more prosperous.
Much more prosperous. Even his household may have been more powerful than the king's household, which is what you're saying, too. He's a threat to him, possibly. Yes?
It looks to me like God did a payback to these Philistines for plugging up the wells that Abraham had done and made Isaac so prosperous right in front of him.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does Isaac do? Does he rise up? I'm going to fight these guys. What is his response in verse 17? He moved. So, okay. And it's a lot to move. This entourage, he's moving. Rick, if you'd go to 22 now, that'd be great.
Then Isaac dug again the wells of water, which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. And he gave them the same names which his father had given them. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of flowing water, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac, saying, the water is ours. So he named the well Esek, because they contended with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over it too, so he named it Sitna. And he moved away from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it, so he named it Rehoboth, for he said, at last the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land.
Thank you, thank you. What about... It's happening now. More adversity for Isaac. He's out in a less, fruitful area now, but yet they're still bothering him, and it's the herdsman now saying, and it's just, we learn a couple of things here. One is how he responds to this. One thing is very interesting, the names that he makes for these wells. What does Esek mean? Does anybody have that in their
contention?
And how about Sitna? Hate. Contention and hate. He names these wells after he digs them and they come fill them back up. And again, he moves away from there and... he digs another well. And in this case, they didn't quarrel over it, so he named it Rehoboth. And what does that mean, Rehoboth?
Spacious.
Spacious. There's room. Is there any shadows or types here, do you think, of this? What is this world like, basically? Like it or not, the throng of people... the issues, it's a world of contention, and it's a world of hate. And however, there is a place after this where there's room, there's enlargement, there's room enough. In fact, Jesus said there'd be room enough because there's many, what? Mansions. That's a great picture, I thought. But it's also, you know, you the only way to find peace sometimes is to pursue peace. And this tells a little bit about, you learn about Isaac and how he dealt with the challenges that were around him. He didn't bow up. He didn't choose to stay in Gerar and fight, you know, and, you know, he didn't even fuss about the fact that they had taken all these things from him, essentially. Well, made him move. They didn't take them from him. That's coming up in this next little section regarding Abimelech coming to him. Let me take a chance to read three verses as we continue on. Any other questions about any of these things or comments on? I think there's a place in Delaware called Rehoboth. Yeah, Rehoboth Beach. The New Yorkers, they go down there, Rehoboth. Oh, sorry. 23, 24, and 25. Actually, Rick, why don't you finish that?
Then he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him in the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well.
So the Lord appears again, and now he's gone. If we look at this map again in a minute, we'll look at that. He's gone now to Beersheba. And you learn about Beersheba. I guess Beer means well, and Sheba. That's why all these other Beer Larahoy and all these others are just like Beth El and all these Beth this and Beth that. So this is called Beersheba. And God blesses him again. God confirms again after he relocates again. Because now he's left that valley of Gerar and moved everything again. And as he arrives in this new place, and how quickly after he arrived there did it say the Lord appeared to him? Verse 24. That same night. So with all the upheaval he was going through then, I'll bless you. I'm with you. Do not fear. The assurance God gives. And then we'll read 26 to 33 if anybody hasn't read yet. Dave, you want to do that one? 26 to 33. This is Abimelech comes and makes peace.
And Abimelech came to him from Gehar, and his advisor Ahazus and Pichol, the commander of his army. Isaac said to them, why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you? They said, we see plainly that the Lord has been with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you that you will do us no harm, just as we have not touched you and have done you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord. Then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. In the morning they came early and exchanged oaths, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Now it came about on the same day that Isaac's servants came in and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, we have found water. So he called it Shibath. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. When Esau was 40 years old and married Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Basemath.
Hold on there for now. That's another topic there.
Okay.
Thank you, though. First of all, what does Isaac question? Verse 27. What are you doing here?
You know?
sent us away. Things haven't been that great between us, and now you're coming here. So, you know, that's like the saying, why is a servant innocent as doves? According to Abimelech in verse 29, he said, well, we sent you away in peace. Do you think he's accurate about that? I think, boy, this is something I read, and anybody had a question on that?
No, I think he did. I mean,
how did he send him away in peace?
Well, he didn't take his stuff. They didn't leave. They didn't.
You see, I think that was his view.
He prospered big time, and we just said, hey, get out of here, where there could have been conflict initiated by Abimelech to take the stuff. And I think that might be what that means.
Look at Laban. I mean, he wanted to take everything Jacob had made.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Before he left.
And he says, verse 29, Isaac was blessed by the Lord. And despite the challenges, he truly was. And it's interesting to see that that's evident so much. And that's really why I think Abimelech's approaching them. And then 30 and 31, what does this tell you about Isaac, basically?
Right.
Yes.
When he said the blessed of the Lord, do you think he's talking about that that they recognize that he took the place of Abraham?
Say that again.
I mean, they said, you're now the blessed of the Lord. They knew Abraham.
I don't know that that's true. I think that's a phrase that could be evident of anyone. I don't know that that's a... but it could mean that. It could mean that. In other words, yes, we can see that you're of the same status as your father within God's sight. That's obvious by the other things he said. It's almost a surrender, you know, and it's wise of him, wise of anyone to have a great relationship with someone who, in 1 John talks about that, about to be at peace with those who are faithful to God. But then also Isaac, his attitude and action, in verses 30, 31, they made a feast, they ate and drank. He doesn't contend with him at all. They exchange oaths. Isaac sent them away and they departed from him in peace. And then a little providential God's blessing in verse 32. As soon as that event happened, what does Isaac learn? They found water, which is a big deal. That's a big deal. That well that they were digging bore fruit. And he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day, or Beersheba. And our last point, and I guess we don't have time for this, but Esau's Hittite wives. The main thing on this is the verse 35. It's just this little clip about Esau. You know, people usually just marry one woman at a time. A man does. He married how many? I'm going to marry two. And they are both from where? Yeah, basically Canaanites. And the key phrase is they brought grief to the parents. You think they asked the parents on that one? Probably not. Probably not. Or he didn't ask the parents. Anyways, thank you all. I appreciate it.